Off the Ball.
In association with Air. Don't miss live and exclusive Premier League action this month on the Air Sport Pack.
This is News Talk.
Welcome back to Thursday's Off the Ball. Nathan with you this evening. Dan McDonald in studio as well. You can get that Michael Fennelly interview up on offtheball.com right now. We're going to be focusing pretty much between now and the end of the show, though, on the Martin O'Neill situation. I had suggested to JP that we get a nice little sting around this for updates throughout the evening. He rightly pointed out this is far too serious a situation.
You can't be flippant about this.
Possibly the most important man in the country.
He's
right up there.
Yeah, he'd be up there, yeah. Michael D. Yeah, no, I think...
In terms of influence, yeah. In terms of affecting our emotions.
Well, Michael D sort of affects the emotions as well. But I think you're probably right, really. Although, I mean...
Trust me, I love Michael D.
This could add a bit of spice to 2018.
And I'm just like, has Michael D ever given you the sort of emotion you felt when Robbie Brady scored that goal?
No, I mean, I like the fact he goes to the League of Ireland every Friday, though. I mean, I
celebrate heart,
sometimes when he comes in to the ground. And yeah, I mean,
give him a standing ovation.
not quite. But I mean, but I take the general point here.
Okay.
It could give us something to talk about for a large portion of 2018 from a very selfish perspective. Another 117 day manager. What was it for Traps? 100 something days of a manager hunt. Not the scenario that anyone working in the FAI wants, though.
Very quickly, is there any update?
No.
Since I spoke to you an hour ago.
No, Espanyol won. They won their Copa del Rey match away to Levante 2-0, 3-2 in aggregate. So I would assume Kike Sanchez Flores is going to have to do some press stuff. Now, there was a report in Marca claiming that Espanyol directors are sort of not aware of any approach and there's nothing to see here. That's contradicted by stuff that's coming out, pretty well-sourced stuff from the Stoke end of things. So we
nothing
wait to
concrete.
See. Yeah.
All right, Shay Given is on the line. Evening, Shay.
Hey, lads, you okay?
Very well. We were thinking you're probably the best placed man to talk about this, considering you've been in the Ireland squad under Martin O'Neill and Roy Keane. You worked with Roy Keane when he was at Villa as a temporary assistant manager, and you're a former Stoke player, so you can fill us in on all of this. Were you surprised to hear Martin O'Neill so strongly linked with this Stoke job?
Probably not. Obviously, he's a hugely experienced manager, both now at international level and of course, in the Premier League as well. And you know, it's all about, I don't know, something there. We're just speculating because I don't know any better than anyone else. But, I mean, you know, it's just strange that Martin's not been tied down to this contract. He's not signed the contract with FAI, and now it leaves the door open for the likes of Stoke and maybe other clubs that may be looking for a manager down the road that you know, he is sort of available. It must be known to people he is, because I don't think he'd be linked with these jobs if he wasn't.
Will the players be looking at this and wondering how the FAI could agree a deal with Martin O'Neill in October but not get him to sign the contract? Will they be wondering what the hell is going on here? Or when you're a player, do you not worry about these things?
I don't think the players will be that worried. I mean, I don't know, the next game's not till 7 years away. I don't think the next competitive game, it's the longest gap in any international sort of, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's not till 2019, is that right?
Yeah, March 2019.
Yeah, the Nations League might count as competitive, yeah.
Yeah, don't get down into the Nations League.
You probably won't need a manager for a year and then get a manager at the start of next year, you know, if that's that far away from the next competitive game. But I think they should have been... I don't understand when you announce or they've agreed to shake their hands but they're not signing the contract. You know, for me, you either sign a contract or you don't sign a contract, because if it's not signed, it's not agreed. I don't think so. It's a bit of a strange one, in my opinion. It should be, you made the announcement whenever they did sign the contract and it's signed, and that sort of gets rid of speculation, of course. But I don't know if it's coming from Martin's end or the FAI's end. I don't know, obviously, what goes on behind the scenes.
Yeah, I mean, that is the surprising aspect of this, Shay, I think. I mean, who do you think the onus is on? Do you think it is on the FAI as the employer to just get this signed to avoid this situation? Or do you think maybe it's suited Martin O'Neill to leave this flexible in this way?
I don't know, probably a bit of both. Probably more onus on the FAI, I would imagine, because, for example, if he had been signed up now and say Stoke did want him, they could obviously get a sort of financial settlement, even if he was their man, for example. So at the minute, well, as far as I'm aware, he's not signed up and the FAI couldn't even get sort of any sort of, you know, settlement from for example, Stoke, if that was the case and he went there. You know, they'd leave himself open. So I just think if it's agreed and just sign it and then it's done, everyone's covered in it. But it just all seems very open on both Martin's front and the FAI's front, you know. So I don't know if that's the way Martin wanted it or the FAI won't do. There's a couple of, you know, things that weren't totally ironed out. We don't know, Dan, you know, we don't know exactly what's going on behind the scenes. But you would like to have thought they would have had agreed, which is said they had done, and now signed up, but now that's not the case.
Is there a natural shelf life for international managers? Martin O'Neill has been there for two campaigns. The first of them, ultimately, I'd have to say, was a great success, and we had that brilliant moment beating Italy. And really, for a year, backed it up then and had some ridiculous victories. Obviously, we've beaten Germany along the line, Italy winning away in Austria, winning away in Wales. Like, how big a loss would it be to Ireland if Martin O'Neill does go?
Obviously, come in a lot of stick after the, you know, the playoffs with Denmark, and you know, a lot of people got on the back on the bit of a bandwagon trying to, you know, say he's the wrong guy for the job and all this. But you know, I think he could be there as long as he wanted, really, because I think he's a hugely experienced manager, and I think, you know, with the pool of players he's got to the hand, it's not like a club football, you can go and buy players and stuff. You know, we're a little bit limited with the players you can choose from. I mean, you know, a lot of, you know, there's probably half a dozen, seven maybe Premier League players, but the rest are from the Championship, and then some of them are not even playing in the Championship, you know, so it's a very small pool of players, you know. So the job Martin and Roy's done, I think, is fantastic, and you'd like to keep them on, you know, longer, I would say. I know, like you said, there's a shelf life, and you know, fans and media like sometimes like to, you know, spin up this big thing, oh, we needed somebody new in and stuff, but I'm not sure who that person would be to, you know, drastically change things.
What would you like to see from an Ireland manager? Because I think there is, I don't know if it's a split within the country, but certainly maybe Martin O'Neill is appointed as the head of the national team, and he's pretty much solely judged on what the national senior team does, where I think there's a feeling around the country that we almost want a footballing guru, someone who will come in and will be fully from under 14s to the senior team. On top of that, we'll be keeping a close eye on the League of Ireland. Somebody who has this far broader range of responsibilities within Irish football. Like, is that asking for too much?
Well, I think that needs to come from the FAI. Nathan, to be honest, I don't think it's Martin O'Neill's job to say, well, I want to, you know, get all the underage teams playing how I want them to play. I think, you know, as the sort of senior FAI head should come together and say, you know, this is how we play from grassroots up and all the underage, 14s, 16s, 18s, 21s. And then you step into the senior team and nothing's foreign to you. I think, you know, the German team have done it in the past, the Spanish team have done it in the past, and these young players coming into the senior team, it's just a continuation of where they've been for maybe even up to, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years. And I just feel there's a big gap between, well, I don't actually know the grassroots and that much, if I'm being honest, but I don't feel that every manager sort of singing from the same hymn sheet. I think every manager has his way of playing and at different age groups, and I think that's how he wants to play, not how, you know, the FAI or the head of the football. No, I could be wrong, but that's
I think Ruud Dokter was trying to change that to maybe have them as a 4-3-3 formation right the way up, but there was some leeway within that if they had other players that they wanted to accommodate there. There's been a lot of variations thrown out of what might happen if Martin O'Neill does go to Stoke. Initially, there was talk that maybe he could go part-time at Ireland because we don't have a European Championship qualifier for over a year. We're still unsure if he does go whether he would bring the entire backroom team with him, if Roy possibly could be a part-time first team coach, assistant manager. Like, you worked with him when he went to Villa for that short period under Paul Lambert, and he was sort of a part-time assistant with Ireland, and he was with Villa. Like, did you notice any difference to what he was doing with Villa and Ireland to what a full-time assistant would do?
Not really. I don't know if he overly enjoyed it at the Villa, because, you know, he was sort of a bit part-time. Obviously, Paul Lambert was the manager, and he felt maybe he wasn't getting respected and didn't get, you know, enough say perhaps in different things, but I don't know if that would work with Stoke. I don't know. I mean, there was talk about Martin obviously taking the Stoke job and then Roy taking the Ireland job. There's so many permutations that, you know, I do believe one day Roy's going to be a manager, and be that with the next Ireland manager, or be that a club team in England or whatever, then, you know, I do think he's very hungry to be the number one again and to be the boss, of course. You know, when that'll happen, I've no idea, but, you know, I know he's got ambition to be a manager again, and you know, he'd have, you know, I'm sure clubs and even the international team will be looking at that for sure.
What sort of influence did Roy have within the Ireland camp when you were involved?
Well, I mean, Martin was the manager, obviously, and Martin would give the team talks, and then Roy would go around sort of individually, and times at half time, and people need a rocket, sometimes he would do that as well. But I just feel that, you know, he would be very, I don't know, just he would give his opinion to a lot of the players and help them. I think when Roy Keane speaks to, you know, any player, including myself, was like, you respect, you know, for what he's done in the game, where he's been, and you know, you have to take on board what he's saying, of course. And if you don't, then it's fool you, because, you know, you have to learn from these people, and Martin as well. You know, these are, you know, Martin won the European Cup. You know, they're winners and they're champions, you know, when they played and stuff. And And that demands huge respect, of course, within the change room. And when they speak, both of them, then, you know, the lads listen, you know. And it's just a shame, like, as you know, probably some people would say they deserved a lot of the flack, and some would say they didn't, you know. I think it was a bit over the top, because probably the nature of the defeat, of course, in Dublin, that didn't help, you know, the amount of goals we conceded in the second leg. That was probably sort of lit the touch paper, what should we say. But, you know, I just think of the poll later day, then I think these two guys will be great if they go into the next campaign.
I mean, Shay, if we wake up tomorrow morning and, you know, Kike Sanchez-Flores is appointed and the Stoke thing goes away, do you think, though, this could be potentially damaging for Martin O'Neill in any way if he stays on, that now we are aware, I know we're in the realms of speculation, but we certainly are aware that he was open to looking at some other position. I mean, do you think that this is a difficulty for him?
I don't know if it's a difficult one. I don't know, you know, because obviously you guys might know better in the media, but there was talk about him not being happy with the, you know, the amount of flack he got after the Denmark game. So, you know, he could be looking at his options, and I suppose he's got a right to do that as well. But I just feel, as I said from the offset, I think, you know, that it should have been tied down, and then it's sort of out of Martin's hands as much as anything. It's probably the FAI's decision. If, you know, if Stoke or someone else in a couple of months come up with a Znor job, perhaps, and he's linked with that as well, you know, it should be tied down, and there's no, you know, it's just so much shut up in the air at the minute. It's open, I think, on all fronts, you know. And you don't know, Martin might want to get back into club management as well. We, you know, we need to speak to Martin, really, because I'm only sort of, you know, speculating, probably like everyone else. I don't really know, you know, where his mental state is. You know, he might miss the everyday to day stuff of club football. Of course, as I said, it's, what, 13, 14 months before the next competitive game. And you know, there's a different thing to friendlies. Yeah, it's, you know, great to play in a friendly for your country, but at the same time, that competitive age, it's a long time before the next game, and maybe he misses the everyday sort of involvement in club football as well.
Yeah, it does seem, the more you think about it, it's so remarkable that an organisation's most important employee can be let go on without putting pen to paper and actually signing a contract for, 14, 15 weeks at this stage, after we first heard that he had agreed to stay on until 2020. Before we let you go, Shay, Stoke at this stage, they're one of those clubs like West Brom, Southampton. They've been almost stuck in a sort of mid-table limbo in recent seasons. They had three successive top 10 finishes under Mark Hughes. It almost felt over the last little while they were craving some excitement. Now they've been getting it, and they're in a relegation fight. Like, what's your sense of what the expectations would be for Martin O'Neill if he went in at Stoke? Is it just right now all about survival?
Well, I would imagine so. You know, at this stage of a season, you know, when you're in the bottom three, then I think any club down there that changes their manager, then yeah, it's very much about staying in the league this last 3 or 4 or 5 months, whatever it is, to the end of the season. And then, you know, you reevaluate things in the summer, and obviously budgets and how much money you've got to spend and bringing in new players and strengthening and stuff. And maybe even the thing is about Stoke as well, they need to get it done sort of sooner rather than later, because the window's open now. And if Flores comes in or Martin O'Neill comes in, then they'll have probably targets in their head of players they want to come in, and maybe even players at Stoke they might want to sell to try and generate money as well to you know, shape the team. I know it's only a few weeks to the end of the window, but, you know, we've seen in the past with Sam Allardyce and the likes, you know, the January window can be so important for keeping teams in the division. And, you know, I think the sooner Stoke get it done, the better, because I think they're good enough to stay up. But, you know, we've heard that before about other teams getting relegated and no team's too good not to go down. But I do feel there's quality within the Stoke squad that they'll be fine. But, you know, the results have been very poor of recent months, of course, and that's why Mark lost his job. So they need to get it done, you know, sooner rather than later.
Good stuff, Shay. Thanks a lot for taking the call.
All right, guys. No worries.
All right, we're going to talk with another former... Are you all right?
Yes, my voice temporarily went there. It's just the excitement of the evening is just sort of... I've lost it.
Oh, you're overcome by the emotion of it all.
An hour and a bit to go.
I hope you can survive, because up next, we're going to be talking to another former Ireland international and a Stoke legend. I'm going to go for it. Liam Lawrence is up next.
Off the ball.
In association with AIR. Don't miss live and exclusive Premier League action this month on the AIR Sport Pack.
This is News Talk.
You're welcome back. We are still talking about Martin O'Neill and whether he is going to end up at Stoke City or whether it will be Kike Sanchez-Flores, and then what happens if Martin O'Neill doesn't go to Stoke and whether he ends up coming back to take charge of the Republic of Ireland. We're joined on the line by Liam Lawrence, former Irish international and a former Stoke player. Evening, Liam.
Good evening.
I know you still spend a lot of time around Stoke. What do you think the qualities are that Martin O'Neill has that made him an attractive proposition to Stoke?
I think they need to be more solid as a team and a unit, and I think, you know, Martin O'Neill brings that, and he can definitely bring that to Stoke. You know, the last 2 months that I've been watching Stoke and doing the commentary on the radio, they just seem to have lost their way a little bit and they're lacking a lot of confidence. So I think he'd be the right man for the job, that's for sure.
Is it then a return to the Tony Pulis-style philosophy, maybe getting the ball forward from back to forward a little bit quicker?
Maybe that's what they need. You know, I know Stoke's been in a transition period of, you know, trying to get away from the more direct approach, if you like. They wanted to see more flowing football, but it did work out in the previous campaigns, but this year it doesn't seem to have, and, you know, they've obviously had to go with sacking Mark Hughes, and I do think they need to be, like I said, more solid and compact, and I think that's what Martin O'Neill will bring.
Yeah, we're hearing that it seems to be split down the middle almost between Martin O'Neill and Kike Sanchez-Flores, maybe in the last few hours becoming clear that Kike Sanchez-Flores is now the favourite for the job. Like, the hierarchy at the club with the Coates family, it seems that the owner perhaps was keen on Martin O'Neill, but John Coates, who's the CEO, maybe was more keen on Kike Sanchez-Flores. Is that your understanding of how it works?
Yeah, I spoke to someone earlier, and the whispers coming out of the Irish camp is that he was quite close to getting a job today and getting something done, Martin O'Neill. So I spoke to someone at Stoke who's an insider, sort of with the radio and stuff, and he seems to think that there's more chance that Flores will get the job. So at the minute, it's anybody's guess.
Yeah, it does seem Peter Coates, the owner, maybe a bit more old school and realising that Stoke are in quite a desperate position right now in the Premier League and maybe need a short-term fix, somebody who will come in and, as you say, make them better defensively, make them that little bit more solid and get them to the end of the season and ensure you're still getting your 100 million quid for another season, whereas perhaps John Coates, the younger version, the CEO of the club, is looking slightly more long-term with Kike Sanchez-Flores, somebody who can take this on like Mark Hughes did for the next 2 or 3 years?
Yeah, like you say, you know, they do need to be more compact and hard to beat and harder to break down, and I just think Martin O'Neill's the right man for that sort of play, if you like. But, you know, they don't make decisions lightly, the Coates family, and, you know, they'll get it right in the end. But like I said, at the minute, it's anybody's guess who gets the job.
Stoke have spent a lot of money in transfer fees over recent seasons, and I'd imagine they're spending quite a chunk of money on wages as well. When you look at the caliber of players who've come in, the likes of Yese coming in last summer, Saido Berahino, who they eventually got after a long time waiting, they brought Wilfried Boni, Gianelli Mbula, Jordan Shaqiri, players like this on huge wages. They clearly do have big ambitions for what Stoke can achieve, maybe greater ambitions than finishing ninth in the Premier League. What is the height of what Stoke can go and achieve?
You know, since getting promoted when I was there, the club's gone forward massively. You know, they've built a lovely new training ground, and like you say, they have spent quite a bit of money. For one reason or another, sometimes them transfers haven't quite worked out. You know, spring straight to mind, that was quite a big transfer fee for Stoke. You know, they do have a lot of money. They can compete with some of the bigger clubs, if you like, but I just think they need to get back to basics now and, you know, get some real fight and some hunger back in the side.
Like, Mark Hughes had tremendous success, like took them to a level further even than Tony Pulis did, but then it stalled massively, and you're talking about the problems at the back there. What went wrong, really, over the first 3-4 months of the season? Was it just that he got it badly wrong in the transfer market? Was that maybe the message had become a little bit stale?
I don't know. You know, it's hard to put your finger on it. Like I said, I've been watching the last couple of months closely, and, you know, there's been a steady decline in performance, and just seems like their confidence has not. They have got some good players, and when they do knock it about and they do play well, they look an exciting side. But, you know, the results have not been going right, and when that happens, obviously confidence goes, and the results have shown that the confidence has gone. They just need to be harder to beat and harder to play against, because that's what you associate with Stoke, isn't it?
Yeah. If Martin O'Neill does arrive, it seems he's going to bring his entire backroom staff with him. Steve Walford, Steve Guppy, Roy Keane as well as his assistant manager. Would Roy Keane provide a bit of a buzz around Stoke?
Yeah, obviously Roy Keane's a massive, massive name, and, you know, I'm sure he'd give one or two of them a kick up the backside if they needed it, that's for sure.
Yeah. Liam, great stuff as always. Thanks a lot for taking the call, giving us that insight into what's going on at Stoke at the moment. Liam Lawrence there, former Ireland international, former Stoke player. The football show still to come. We're going to be chatting to Richard Dunn and also to Guillaume Balaguer, who has been really leading the charge on the Kike Sanchez-Flores front and was first with the news that it seemed as though he is now the favourite to get that Stoke job. So plenty more to come on this. Get your text in to 53106.
Off the ball. On News Talk 106 to 108.
I'm prepared to anything I can.
Well,
to
do it then.
Again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Now, Guillaume Balaguer coming up in about half an hour. We will get some insight from him into Kike Sanchez-Flores. He seems to have a good connection there. He's been sort of on top of this all day. He was the first to report that it was Kike Sanchez-Flores' job if he wanted it, which at first we were all like, wait a second, this is Martin O'Neill's job if he wants it.
Yeah, there was a small bit about that, and I would say in one or two of the English papers today as well, but then sort of events overtook it last night, I think, with the, when it sort of filtered out that O'Neill had been speaking with him too. But I think it appeared the pendulum had swung in one way, and I think, yeah, when you started to hear about this firm dilemma that Flores seemed to have, it became clear maybe that Martin O'Neill was just part of a process rather than the central figure in it.
Richard Dunn to come as well very shortly for his thoughts on all this. So we might just go through then some of the timeline around this. It's 14 weeks ago. The FAI send out a tweet, unexpected, sort of, like there'd been a little bit of talk in the days around it, but I still don't think anyone thought 3-4 days.
Is this
the
contract?
Game.
Oh, the yeah. Contract. Well, earlier that day, it was the day of the Moldova game, the day before the Moldova game, where there was a press conference where O'Neill was asked about his future. Sort of gave a bit of a non-committal thing. But then all of a sudden, as you say, the tweet goes out. Based on discussions, I gather, which had taken place the previous day between O'Neill and FAI board.
The tweet said, Martin O'Neill has agreed a contract extension and will continue as the Republic of Ireland manager for the Euro 2020 campaign. Now, that was the 5th of October. A lot of people took that as the deal being done. Now, Martin O'Neill never says during that interview that it was signed.
But we had sort of been here before as well.
Well, the very first media briefing when we got to Versailles,
yeah,
around Euro 2016 was dominated by this. And Martin O'Neill was, it's a handshake, which means it's a done deal.
It's all done.
You don't need to worry about this. We have shaken hands on it.
3 months later then, we're in Serbia going, has this been signed yet? No. No. And I think it was like something, maybe October, early October, before the Georgia-Moldova games. It was like, oh yeah, it's been signed. No problem here. Nothing to see.
So has this just been a rolling contract? It's 2 months since the defeat to Denmark. My understanding is the contract is till the end of the campaign. So that means, once qualifying is done, if you qualify, you're not having to have further negotiations. It's to the end of this World Cup cycle if you qualify, or yeah, whenever Ireland's interest ends. So has Martin O'Neill's been getting paid for the last 2 months?
Yeah, I would assume, again, the suggestion would be it's sort of like a rolling arrangement, basically. And that is the thing. I mean, of course he's been paid, really. I mean, to take that sort of to the nth degree, it would mean that he was working for free in Serbia at that time when the game, you know, because he hadn't signed the contract by that point. I mean, that's clearly not the case. I think it's just a rolling arrangement. And the FAI, it's very, you know, they've kept it tight enough in terms of maybe contractual details. That sort of stuff hasn't necessarily hugely filtered out, and in terms of when it firmly ended. But I would have been of the understanding that once the campaign is over, once you're knocked out, that's the end of it. The flip side would be, does it last until the summer when the World Cup is over? I don't think that would be that hasn't been the way before when other people have been shown the door at the end of a campaign.
And it's been very quiet since. Like, we haven't heard from Martin O'Neill. I sort of almost feel as well as though I would like to hear a proper Martin O'Neill sit down interview explaining what happened in 2017.
Yeah, it is striking how
we just had that sort of tetchy interview with Tony O'Donoghue, a very short press conference, And that was it.
That was it, though. That basically was it. I mean, I think in previous years, there would have been a sort of a ceremonial end-of-year award circuit. There's like the soccer writers' dinner tomorrow night. That would have been a part of it. You would hear from him at sort of RTE Sports Awards and those other, you know, type of events. We saw him in the audience at the BBC one. But even he pops up now and again in other sort of, you know, stations over the water and Talk Sport and BBC and stuff. There hasn't been, I think he surfaced maybe at one point, but there hasn't been a huge amount of that. And it did appear there is an element that he's definitely sore by the reaction to the Denmark game. And because things ended so badly, there's an element of a cooling off period. He definitely was over discussing things with the FAI, because when the games were announced, with regard to the game against Turkey in March, which is a little training camp before it, and the France game in the summer, that wouldn't have been done without some kind of consultation, any kind of discussion. So he has been over. It's not as if he's been in England the whole time.
And he hasn't been answering his calls or anything like that. Yeah. Because even the draw for your much-loved European Nations League.
I must say, they are competitive games. They are going to count as competitive games.
Are they not rugby tests?
No, it's not that.
They're semi-competitive.
It's not arbitrary. Like, there will actually be, you're not going to decide.
Points will be awarded.
Seeding position sealed. Will be determined, and, you know, your seeding position will count. And
you don't need to convince me then. I'm sorry.
You know, it's just 13 months to a competitive game or something sounds grim. It's just 9.
But he was going to go to that draw.
Oh, he's booked up to go. Booked up to go in a couple of weeks.
So clearly there has been regular enough contact.
I think there's like a boarding pass probably printed off somewhere with his name on it. It's going to be an awkward one now.
But again, there's people within the FAI who deal with all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Do we know if John Delaney and Martin O'Neill have been in the same room and spoken about a contract since that Denmark game?
No, we don't know that. I mean, whatever about it not being signed, you would like to think that they have, because that would be troubling if we've reached this point without any discussions about that having taken place at all.
Would the FAI not be right to trust Martin O'Neill? Because, as you say, we have been in this situation before around Euro 2016 and think, well, actually, there was no issue the last time. We've nothing to worry about. We've shaken his hand. We know what that's worth. It's all going
to
be fine.
Yeah, and look, to a certain degree, I mean, that Danish result was so devastating, the manner of the defeat, that I understand you're not going to get on the phone the next day and say, about that contract, do you want to come in and talk about this? There is going to be a natural, maybe, cooling off period again after that. But 2 whole months almost from, what, November sort of 11th, 12th, or whatever that period that was, to now, I think the period for just taking a bit of a break in this and take a bit of stock after that, it's gone beyond that to the point where this should have been addressed. And sure, they, in some way, because it happened the last time, they would feel that you know, on this time around it would be the same thing. But it's a certain naivety in that, I think, if you allow it to get to that position. I just don't think it's excusable, really, when you get to the second week of January, particularly, as you know, with the transfer window, with January being such a huge month in football generally. It's the time of year when jobs really come up. In fact, there was other jobs that came up that might have worked for him for whatever reason. I'm not sure if they were really ever players, but they came up. That should be the shove to get things going. So only maybe a couple of people really know whether they properly spoke about contracts since then. But it'd be pretty unforgivable if they hadn't at all.
It as you say, it would be unforgivable, and it does seem so strange. Like, does it not then lead you to believe that maybe the FAI, looking at the result and looking at the reaction to the result, and a sense among a lot of Irish supporters that maybe this was coming, that the performance level has dipped to such an extent over the last year that maybe that type of performance at home was coming, that they were relaxed, that if Martin O'Neill decided to go, okay, they were willing to accept that.
Maybe so. I mean, I know we spoke outside. I mean, a lot of messages we've got in tonight, there's not necessarily a lot of people out there going, this is a crisis, a disaster, in the sense that we could lose Martin O'Neill, the manager that is beloved to the public. I think there's split opinions about keeping him out there. And I mean, are the FAI reactive to that? I mean, maybe, but it's not as if we're in a situation where there's loads of outstanding candidates out there ready to come in.
You don't suspect that if Martin O'Neill does get that Stoke job tomorrow, that in a week's time we'll be sitting at an unveiling press conference, and, well, unless it's Roy Keane, but that there'll be an outsider that the FAI have had their eye on for several months?
No, I just find that line hard to believe, because they were so keen to get the thing done before the Wales match, to get the agreement out there before the Wales match. And sure, the Danish thing was...
So that was coming from that deal, because there was confusion at the time whether Martin O'Neill had managed to, he's an experienced operator in these circles, he managed to get the FAI into a position where, yeah, he wanted the contract and they went, okay, important games coming up, let's go with this.
Yeah.
Your sense is that?
My sense would be, and I'm, look, he's not, he's savvy enough, Martin O'Neill, he's intelligent enough to know probably, you know, he was in a position of strength. And ironically enough, I mean, certainly after the Wales game, he would have been in a hugely strong position. But I just, my understanding from the soundings at the time was that Martin O'Neill was maybe almost a bit surprised by the FAI's eagerness to really get this out there. Because it's one thing to have talks behind closed doors and have this in place. It's another to, as you said earlier, put out the press release and the announcement. But at a point where I gathered they hadn't really even spoken about, say, terms, conditions,
right,
pay,
okay,
you know, that type of stuff. So for some reason, and we, I mean, in time, John Delaney and people in the FAI will have to address this. You know, why were they so anxious to get that out there then? Because that in itself has created this problem. In fact, after the Denmark game where the result went badly, I think probably the general public would have understood a situation where the FAI say they're going to take time to consider their options. Yes, that probably risks alienating the manager a bit, and I guess you can see both sides of that situation. But it's a strange position when you were so keen to get it out there in October that you would be having this discussion here today.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I'd actually just assumed that everything had been agreed. So when that statement came out from the FAI, that actually the terms, the conditions, the pay, the length of the contract, the backroom staff, all that had been agreed, and maybe there was a few little bits and pieces here and there, and there was crossing the T's and dotting the I's and all that. And that was all that was there. Yeah. In fact, like, they hadn't even got to that stage.
No, I think there was an agreement that, you know, the next campaign and your staff will stay with you and so on. We'll work it out in due course, which was pretty much what we had the last time. And at the time, you know, after the Euros or before the World Cup campaign, there was a suggestion there was one or two details in the contract that just needed to be ironed out. I mean, that may well be the case this time, that there's just a couple of sticking points. But at the time that the announcement was made, they hadn't been down the road very far at all.
Yeah. Like, from Martin O'Neill's point of view, like, the FAI, by approaching him and by offering him this contract extension, remember, this is before the Wales game when everyone's a little bit down in the dumps about things.
Yeah.
We've just gone to Georgia, probably had our two worst performances of the campaign, drawing over in Georgia. We've just lost at home to Serbia. At that stage, I don't think anyone thinks we're going to qualify for the World Cup.
Yeah.
And still, they show, listen, we appreciate all you've done. We've seen the depths we were in when you took over the job from Giovanni Trapattoni. We've seen the way you brought us through Euro 2016. We've seen some of the performances during this campaign away from home. And we think there's enough there to give you an extension. And they've gone out on a limb there. This wasn't 2 days after the Wales game when suddenly they're being reactive and going
opportunistic. Yeah, totally. And that is a very valid point. And I suppose if this plays out in such a way that the FAI end up being disappointed with Martin O'Neill, say, that is the point you will go back to, that was, you could interpret it as almost stand by your man sort of, you know, brave. They weren't just being, as you said, reactive to opinion. They supported them at a time when it maybe wasn't what the public were crying out for. Sometimes you have a player or a manager out of contract and everyone's like, sign him up, get it done. There was no clamour around that time. So they maybe would say, well, we were loyal to him then. You would expect it from him now. But, you know, time has passed. A lot of water has gone under the bridge since then.
Just one more thing before we get to Richard Dunn, who's been very patient and standing by. If O'Neill doesn't go to Stoke, do you see a way back for him as Ireland manager?
I think it's difficult. I think there is a way back. I think certainly, you know, players and people within football know that people eye up jobs and see what goes on. I think maybe in terms of the public reaction, it chips away a small bit at the standing, because you can just be sure if there's a bad result at some stage, you know, in the next competitive game, whenever that is, like Asher, he wanted to go to Stoke. If it ends up looking like the Irish job is his plan B, I guess, his backup option, then that is a slight difficulty for him, I think. It's something that probably can be overcome.
Yeah.
In time,
I just thought that this...
But it's not ideal.
This 14, 15-month spell was always going to be slightly strange, and you didn't want to turn it into a Trapattoni situation where it definitely felt as though he had stayed on that year too long, and that by the time we got to the qualifiers, people are almost, maybe Martin O'Neill wasn't the right man to stay on, but now we're here, we've stuck with him this long, that actually this does undermine him.
Yeah, it's a difficult one because this year was meant to be the rebuilding job. Once he's decided to stay, the whole angle is some players are going to retire, go to Turkey with some new faces, and let's move on and let's look to the future. There's a danger now that whenever he comes in, there's an element of, well, actually, are you really up for this rebuilding job? Because you were maybe looking at something else here. They're experienced enough to overcome it, but it doesn't look great at this point. It's a difficult equation from which to emerge and claim that there was nothing to see here.
Yeah, I nominate you to ask Roy Keane at his first press conference back how close he came to walking out on his country at that time.
Oh, yeah. I'd like to see you do it. I want to see it on video, Pat. See it on video.
I want it on digital, yeah. Richard Dunn is on the line. Evening, Richard.
Good evening, lads. How are you?
What do you make of all this?
I suppose it's natural. I mean, if the FAI haven't got around to getting him to sign a contract, it only leaves the window open for him to go and look at other jobs. So you can't sort of blame him in that way. If there's no contract being signed, well then, coming up to the end of his contract, well he's entitled to go and look at other things, and it doesn't sit well for the Irish job or for the FAI in terms of, they should have dealt with this beforehand. We had the same situation before the Euros and they just let it drag on, and this is what happens. Then people will come and try and poach him away.
He did take a huge amount of criticism, and rightly so, you'd have to say, after the manner of the defeat to Denmark. But maybe it's a testament to, well, all that's gone before in his club career, but also the respect that he earned with getting Ireland to Euro 2016, getting out of the group stage, that he is still being offered jobs within the Premier League. And you look at some of the other countries close by, like Michael O'Neill has been linked with jobs but not in the Premier League. Gordon Strachan leaving the Scotland job hasn't been linked with a job in the Premier League. Chris Coleman, for the brilliant job he did at Wales, still had to go and take the Sunderland job at the bottom of the Championship. Like, Martin O'Neill's stock is still pretty high.
Yeah, it seems to be. It seems in the Premier League at the moment, I think any team that's changing their manager, their first thought is to go and get someone who's got Premier League experience and someone who knows the way it all goes in the league. And certainly Martin's done that. He's been successful when he was at Aston Villa, and he's had spells at other clubs as well. So he's someone who wouldn't take any sort of settling in time. He'd be straight into it. And like you've seen in many jobs that he's gone into, he's got that ability to motivate teams and turn things around quickly. So he is, I suppose, the ideal appointment for a Stoke or someone at that level. So you can understand why people want him, and his track record with Ireland up to really this last year has been very good. So it's not a surprise that clubs have been sniffing around him throughout the last couple of months.
Would he be leaving the Ireland job in a better position than when he took over?
You would say so. I mean, there's a lot of players who have come through in recent times, and it's just very disappointing the way it finished in the last group stages and a lot of the playoffs and that. But up until then, everything was going really well, and you have to look back on the last couple of campaigns, and they have been mainly positive. I know the football people have complained about, but in terms of results and bringing players through, I think they've been quite successful. So I think, for now, for the next manager, if there is a next manager, they've got a positive squad to choose from.
Yeah, you'd what, a year under O'Neill, was it, at Villa?
Yeah,
we were just talking to Liam Lawrence there about maybe what he can bring to Stoke, and he's saying like what Stoke really need is some sort of solidity at the back. Like, how big a focus is that for Martin O'Neill?
I think his aim is getting the best out of the players that he's got, and there's no specific sort of training in certain positions or whatever. He expects people who, certainly defenders, he expects defenders to defend, midfielders to run up and down, and strikers to score. There's no demand on extra training on certain positions and stuff like that, but it's quite amazing the influence and the change in atmosphere he can bring when he's just telling people that they're brilliant, that their job, they're great, and the confidence starts to grow and people believe it, and then soon enough, the results turn around, and you're just getting that positive response from him the whole time, and he keeps you going and going and going. And then that's what Stoke need at the moment, is just a change of attitude, a change of mood in the camp, really. And because they've got decent players, they've been ninth position for the last 3 years, so they're obviously a decent squad. It's just things have gone a little bit stale for them at the moment. So if someone can come in like Martin and just change that mentality and just give them that bit more belief, well then for him that'll be a successful job, and Stoke will be delighted with him.
It does sound as though he is almost the perfect personality for that sort of firefighting role for a team that's in the relegation zone, and there's almost a managerial merry-go-round now with the likes of Sam Allardyce, Alan Pardew, Tony Pulis going into these jobs on a regular basis, and like maybe Martin O'Neill becomes part of that. Like what this time of the season, they've a game Monday night away at Manchester United. Games are coming quick and fast. You don't get much time on the training ground to work tactically, to overly change things. That is that force of personality, the powers of motivation, all the more important when you're in that sort of struggle?
Yeah, I think so. I think especially when you're playing so many matches, and then, like you say, there's not that much time on the training field and players are recovering. You want to feel good about yourself after matches. And obviously, the way they are at the moment, their heads will be down, the confidence is very low, and you just want someone to come in and give you that extra bit of belief. I'm sure whoever goes in there, whether Martin or the other lad who's involved with it, but we'll just go and sign a couple of players quickly, and it'll just freshen up the dressing room, and that will give people a boost. And then if you have got a manager who can encourage you and almost just say, just go and play a game because you've been doing it great for however long, just go and do it again, the players will react to it, and they will. And whether it's in the long term, it's sustainable, but certainly for the situation that they're in at the moment, I think it's the best way to go.
Can you understand, Richard, why you would be tempted by the opportunity? I mean, I suppose there is no major competitive game coming up from Ireland, but I suppose the flip side of that is you would think his job there is quite safe once the FAI want him to stay. You know, can you understand why he would be still looking at the Stoke gig as an attractive one in the short term?
I can do, yeah. I think he really enjoyed enjoying the Irish job, but you've seen in certain interviews and he doesn't react well to criticism. And I think the criticism after the Denmark match really stung him, and I think he's probably thought, well, I've done my best, so now I'll go. If I'm not appreciated, I'll go and do something else. And maybe he's felt that from wherever the media or the fans or whatever, which is understandable because the performance against Denmark was poor and tactically it was poor. So you can, for him, it's probably a chance, just because he's been quite successful with Ireland. He would look back at it and say, I've done well. So now he can move on. And if he gets a job where it's day to day and he's involved again in the Premier League, it's a big draw still, the Premier League, for everybody. And I'm sure Martin would love another crack at it.
You mentioned there Kike Sanchez-Flores, who is now the favourite for the job, and we'll probably find out in the next 24 hours or so whether he's going to take that Stoke job. If he does, we're in an almost unprecedented position where the international team manager has gone and spoken with a club team, made it clear that he wanted that job, but then didn't get that job, and is now back, we think, even though he hasn't signed any sort of a contract. Like, it's such a confusing situation that we might find ourselves in over the next couple of weeks. Like, again, I've been asking Shea Given this earlier on, and various former players, like, are the players looking at this wondering what the hell's going on?
Yeah, definitely. I think as soon as he gets linked and it looks like, well, he wants the job, as a player you would just imagine, well, he's gone now, I wonder who the next manager is. So for him to then come back, you're like, well, yeah, what is going on here? But it's a situation that the FAI have almost put themselves in, because they need to clarify this rather than just saying, yeah, we've shook hands on something, we'll sign the deal and then that's it. And then if he wants to go, they get compensation or whatever. But there's no, there doesn't seem to be any sort of leadership at the moment. Either way, nobody knows, is he coming alone or whatever. And then It's a difficult one for him to come back into. I think, well, if he set his mind out that he wants to leave and he wants to get another job, are the FAI then happy to play second fiddle and just be, well, I didn't get that, so yeah, I'll stay with you? So I'm sure they'll have to have some strong conversations and try and sort it out between themselves, because at the moment it's looking like a bit of a mess.
Yeah, it really does feel, Dan, as though we're going to need to see and hear some leadership from the FAI over the coming days as to how this has played out over the last couple of months. And as we say, like, maybe they were completely taken aback by what happened over the last couple of days, but certainly for John Delaney to come out and explain how they ended up in a position where Martin O'Neill had not signed a contract and was free to go and talk to other clubs.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible that in some way the FAI will come out and say, well, actually, we had a discussion amongst ourselves and we said, if any other opportunities come up, you know, you're free to pursue them. But it, as I said, like, that's just hard to really buy when they were so keen to get him to stay in October. Because if you take that approach and say that you were totally comfortable with the situation, then are you saying that you were relaxed about the possibility of losing this manager as well, that you were okay with it? I mean, if you want him desperately to be your manager for your next campaign, then you get what's necessary done to secure that situation, I would have thought. I don't see how you can explain it away afterwards. And it has just created a bit of a story here that could so easily have been, you know, it's a fire that could have been put out some time ago.
Yeah, like maybe I'm been over the top in terms of like what this does for Martin O'Neill, and maybe we all move on and we forget about this, and in 6 months' time when we've gone through four or five friendlies, everyone's moved on and he's signed his contract and we know he's there until 2020. But like, Richard, with the feeling that was there after the Denmark game and the criticism that came through, do you see that as a possibility that in 6 months or in a year or 15 months when we get to those European Championship qualifiers, that if Martin O'Neill is still the Ireland manager, that he has the full support of the supporters and the players?
Well, sure, if he gets us to the next tournament, well, then definitely he will. But I agree with Dan there. It's like, it seems to, at the moment, the situation is just, well, the FAI aren't really bothered if he's the manager or not, and he's not really bothered if he stays or not. So it doesn't give you any confidence, you know, going forward. You would, as a player, you're probably looking at it thinking, well, if we lose a couple and he doesn't fancy anymore, he might just leave, or the FAI might just get rid of him. So there's no, they need to come out and make a strong statement, either the FAI or Martin O'Neill, and either sign the contract or just go their separate ways, and then we can start looking forward again with a manager that the players can follow and know that they can trust that he's going to be there for the long term.
Yeah, because like this was been spoken about, I think Kenny Cunningham was talking about it earlier, that this is a unique opportunity almost for an international manager where there is a lengthy break and we do need some sort of rejuvenation. We need to bring the likes of Declan Rice and several more, even of the under-21s who aren't playing first team football. We need to bring them in over the next 9-12 months, get them involved, get them some experience. You really do need a manager though who's going to, at the start of this, saying, the end goal here is 2020. We're all in this together. Otherwise, those players are looking around wondering, well, all right, I've impressed Martin O'Neill, but as you say, there could be another manager in 6 months, 9 months' time.
Well, that's it. The thing is there's no competitive matches. So if we do go 6-9 months down the line of friendly matches and he gets a bit bored of that, and then another job comes up and it's like, well, yeah, we'll take this one this time. So for me, they need to sign a contract. They need to agree that this is it, you're in this for the long term, whether it is Martin or someone else. And then you'd look at it going forward and we might lose games and friendlies and stuff like that, but as long as we're improving and we're bringing new players through, like you spoke about, getting them first team experience and getting them games and with the aim, like you say, because to have the Euro, the 2020 tournament in Dublin, we need to be part of it. So that has to be the aim, and what comes between now and then is that we have a manager who we can follow, who we can trust in, and who we know will be there in 2 years or whatever it is, 2 years, 2.5 years time.
Just on who that might be, Kenny Cunningham was on OTB AM with Owen and Jer this morning. He says if Martin O'Neill leaves, it doesn't necessarily mean that Roy Keane will go with him. And in an ideal world, from Kenny's point of view, that we would manage to keep hold of Roy Keane.
That's the ideal for me, really, in terms of if you do lose your manager, there's somebody within the system who's been working around the players who can immediately be in. In this instance, of course, it's Roy, obviously one of our most iconic figures. But I very much like the idea. I know that wasn't John's intention when Roy came in. He was saying it was Martin's decision to bring Roy in. But I like the idea of certainly one of our former players being part of the backroom team for a period of time. And I think there's a real opportunity for Roy to stamp his authority on the squad as well. I know he's been assistant to Martin. He would have given his opinion and voiced his opinion to Martin on a number of things. But ultimately, Martin was the manager and Martin made the decision. And I'm sure privately, that's always a bit of frustration when you have the role as an assistant manager kind of stroke coach, and you're never quite sure how much influence Roy has around the squad in terms of team selection, you know, kind of preparation in terms of how things operate around the team. So, and it's a huge job, you know, the Irish national team job. It's a huge job. It's the best job in the world, obviously. We're obviously, certainly myself, I'm sure we're all quite biased in that respect. So for Roy to have the opportunity to step in, and like you said, Jerry, suggest stamp his authority on and run it the way he wants to, you know, having already had a taste of it in terms of being around the squad, understanding what it's about, knowing the individual players. And even at this particular time, Jerry, over the next kind of 18 months, it's quite a unique situation in terms of when our next qualifiers come around in March of next year. It's almost a unique opportunity for me to actually come into the job. And I want to say stamp our authority, I mean actually stamp his personality on the team and an opportunity to integrate a real batch of younger players into the squad over the next kind of 12 to 15 month period.
It was interesting listening to Shay Given earlier talking about Roy Keane's time as first team assistant at Villa, that he seemed quite frustrated in that time with Paul Lambert, that he didn't really have any influence on what was going on with the first team. We've never seen any sign of that frustration at all with Keane with the Ireland setup, have we?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think we've seen too much of that. I mean, I get the sense from chat that, I mean, Martin is very much the boss, you know, that Roy is the number two, which, I mean, this question was raised when they went for the job in the first place, when it came along, is Keane in danger of overshadowing O'Neill? I don't think we've ever...
No.
I mean, sometimes he's done the odd press conference and, you know, he's generated a bit of attention, but I don't know if he's ever been that overpowering figure. I mean, Richard, you've worked with Martin, you know, I guess he seems to be we see a different side of him sometimes publicly, but you get the sense that behind the scenes he's very much a strong character, very much in control of what he's doing, I would imagine.
Yeah, 100%. I think in terms of picking a team, or if there's ever any doubt who's manager, he'll certainly show you, you know. But training, he tends to leave to the coaches and let them get on with it, and then he'll watch and study, I suppose, the training and see who's doing well. And that's the thing we've noticed with his team selections throughout the couple of campaigns, is he's not afraid to change the team, you know, at the last minute. Whoever he sees is good in training, that's, it'll be always his decision, and he always does what he personally wants. It's not really much up for debate in terms of picking the team. I think the coaches do the coaching, and he's the manager, and he does the picking of the team. And there's no two ways about it with that.
If he does go,
sorry,
I was going to say, if he does go, should the FAI go all out to keep Roy Keane and appoint him as manager?
I think Roy's done the right thing in terms of working with more experienced managers. But I think for him to become the manager of the national team, I think he has to go back out and do a bit of managing clubs or wherever. I think he's still very young. His experience as first team manager hasn't been outstanding, I wouldn't say. So I think he still has bits to prove. And if you look at the campaign, you have to go, well, we're all disappointed with how it finished, because the tactics, the whatever it was about the game, well, if he's out on the field, he should have more of a say in them coaching bits. The manager will pick the team, but the team should be set up and coached by the coaches, and it didn't look that way, certainly against Denmark. So I think for Roy to be, and I think he will be the manager of Ireland, but I think it might come further down the line, because I think if Martin was to go, the players will probably be expecting a full fresh start rather than continuing on almost from the same regime.
Great stuff, Richard. What's the weather like in the south of France?
Yeah, it's nice. It's quite cold, but it's all right.
By cold, what do you mean?
All right.
14 degrees?
Yeah.
Reservations on that.
Oh, yeah. God,
I know, it's
God,
awful.
I hate that guy. Thanks a lot for taking the call, Richard.
Nice one. Cheers. Thank you.
All right, Richard, done there. We have one more bit of chat about Martin O'Neill to go.
Still more to go.
Tell you what, if this drags out over the weekend, I don't know if I'll survive.
I fear for you.
We've a 5-hour show on Saturday. We may have to interrupt our commentary of Leinster, Glasgow, and Liverpool, Manchester City for Martin O'Neill updates.
Please don't
let it drag on. Let them sort it.
Maybe
tomorrow.
Not. I think maybe tomorrow we might know more.
All right, quick break, and then we're talking to Guillaume Balague.
Off the ball.
In association with Air. Don't miss live and exclusive Premier League action this month on the Air Sport Pack.
This is News Talk.
You're very welcome back. Dan McDonnell is still with us in studio. We have spoken to several Irish legends tonight, with Shay Given, with Richard Dunn, with John Giles, Liam Lawrence, all talking about Martin O'Neill and the possibility of him going to Stoke City. This time, 12 hours ago, I think we all thought it was pretty much nailed on that Martin O'Neill was
close,
going to Stoke
close
City.
To nailed
it,
on. Yeah.
It's since emerged that Martin O'Neill is no longer even the favourite, and it feels and it seems as though it is Kike Sanchez-Flores' job if he wants it. Guillaume Balaguer is on the line. Good evening, Guillaume.
Good evening, Dan.
Is it Kike Sanchez-Flores' job if he wants it?
Basically, he was approached by Stoke. The owner, the CEO, went to Barcelona and spoke to him. He was quite impressed by what they had to say. It's a five-year deal, and there's a lot of money available for now. That probably explains why Mike Hughes wasn't getting many answers when he asked about replacements and reinforcements in the last few months. Clearly, they wanted somebody else in charge. And there was a game today. Espanyol played against Levante, the last 16 of the Cup, and Espanyol have gone through. At the end of the game, Kike Sanchez-Flores was obviously asked about it in different ways, but he said, "Today's not a day to talk about me. It's a big day for Espanyol, but you know, they want to talk about me." So he left it at that. And of course, now he's got, I reckon, about 24 hours to answer the call from Stoke.
What are the factors he has to weigh up as to whether or not he stays with Espanyol?
Well, first of all, I don't think he expected this kind of approach halfway through the season. An approach that is, it makes him, you know, put him in a crossroad, really, because the target of Espanyol when he first arrived was to get Espanyol into European places and eventually into the Champions League. And he's in target to do that this season, in a way, even though some results have been disappointing. So now in the quarterfinals of the Cup, it's becoming a decent season. But he feels that some of the promises that Espanyol gave him when he first arrived with the new ownership that the club has have not been delivered. So he's getting what Espanyol has and what they can give him, but not what they promised. Which means that, in a way, it has been a very frustrating 12 months for him. He thought he was coming to a club where he could go and buy some of the players that he wanted. He hasn't been able to do so. And now it's not so much about getting into the top four as originally was in the plan. It's more about, you know, trying to get to the European League or something like that. But it's not the Espanyol that he wanted. So with that in mind, you know, once Stoke comes with, and it's not about money, but it's about a project that is very exciting, it will be very, very difficult to say no. And Stoke are very hopeful that he will say yes.
One of the reasons I think that Martin O'Neill initially was being linked with the job was that he had a relationship with the Stoke owner, Peter Coates. It seems, though, as if Peter Coates' son, John Coates, who's the CEO at the company and at the club, has really taken charge of this, though, and is thinking more long-term, rather than Martin O'Neill coming in, saving the club from relegation, and then the club making the decision in the summer whether they keep him or not, that actually, even though they are in this relegation fight, they're looking at somebody a little bit younger, somebody a bit fresher, somebody who can take them to another level over the next few seasons?
I think so. I don't know how old Kike Sanchez-Flores is. Must be in his late 40s, so it's not somebody
52.
Is that what it is?
He looks good, though. He looks well for 52.
I don't know. He's the kind of guy that likes good life, and I think his face says that as well. And he wants to be somewhere where he can enjoy himself. As I said, it's very frustrating at the moment at Barcelona, even though, you know, you come out of the training ground and you're about 50 minutes away from the beach. But it's much more than just that for him. Coach Son was in Barcelona. He was one of the club representatives that spoke to Kike Sanchez-Flores, and I think Kike was pretty impressed with what he was hearing. It's quite clear the case that if you look at what Stoke had done in the market in recent times, and the Mark Hughes, I think there were 66 new players, but a lot of it had to be done cleverly, trying to use the little money that was available. And then, of course, then there is the wages that they couldn't compete with other clubs in the same kind of league. But it seems like they were waiting for this kind of thing. They were waiting for an impulse. They were waiting for somebody with new ideas. And the project is perhaps, you know, one of the most ambitious projects that has been put in Kike Sanchez Flores' hands.
Yeah, I mean, Guillaume, do you get the sense that he was surprised by the length of that contract offer? Because, I mean, from the Martin O'Neill perspective, the soundings here is that any discussions he had with Stoke were more short-term. I mean, a five-year deal is quite a statement, you would imagine, that would turn a manager's head. I mean, is there a sense that even that took him aback, the length of what was on offer?
Quite clearly, if you're going to try to convince somebody like Kike Sanchez Flores, you better be good and you better bring something on the table. And the offer from Stoke, yes, I believe, is a five-year deal. There is, of course, a financial link to it as well. And all that makes it so attractive that today Kike didn't want to say yes or no to anything, not in front of the media, not after an important victory. So it is going to be tomorrow, I think. And of course, if the answer is yes, then that answers your question as well. It's not so much that he was surprised by the length. I think he was surprised by the timing of it. And this is not very usual. I know in England it's more usual to change coaches halfway through the season. It's almost unheard of that somebody will leave a post to go to another league halfway through the season when the targets are still there. But yeah, he's accumulated frustrations. And it seems, in a way, for him, you know, moving on is the right decision, if that's what he takes.
He wasn't burnt in any way by his experience at Watford, where he came in, did a very solid job, got them comfortably in mid-table, gets to the semi-finals of the FA Cup, and still, Watford being Watford, they decided to change manager?
But let's not criticise Watford, because they've done it very, very well, very well. Even if they change coaches, managers, they're still competing at the level that they want. So, but yes, of course, as a coach, it was very frustrating for him to be approached. It was a dream come true, and then to realise by January, February, really, that he was not going to stay, that they did not want to negotiate a new contract. And I think he feels he's had a little bit of an unfinished business here. So he's realised what it takes to be a manager of the Premier League, the demands and the intensity of it as well. He loves it. He loved it. And given another opportunity in the Premier League, and even if he's not in the Premier League, even if he doesn't manage to turn things around for Stoke, the parachuting payments and the money that's available should mean that Stoke will go back to be either this season or soon under the stewards of somebody like him, a regular Premier League team.
Great stuff, Guillaume. Thanks for that.
Thank you. Cheers, bye.
All right, we'll take one more quick break and then we'll wrap it all up and try and decide what the hell is going to happen with all this over the next week or so.
Off the ball.
In association with AIR. Don't miss live and exclusive Premier League action this month on the AIR Sport Pack.
This is News Talk.
You're very welcome back. Don't forget, OTB AM is here from 7:45 in the morning. Plenty more on whatever happens overnight in this Martin O'Neill situation. Adrian and Owen will be joined by Kevin Kilbane on that tomorrow night. We'll be talking more Ireland, obviously, as well. Will it be the post-Martin O'Neill era? Doesn't look like it. We'll have Brian O'Driscoll in studio as well. Crappy quiz, looking ahead to the NFL playoffs as well. Sunday, don't forget, huge doubleheader of live action in the European Champions Cup. We have Leinster against Glasgow Warriors at 1. Dave will be alongside Keith Wood and Andy Dunn at that. And then myself and Kev will be at Anfield for Liverpool against Manchester City, which we probably would have spoken a lot about tonight if it hadn't been completely overshadowed by the other events involving Martin O'Neill and Stoke. Like Richard Dunn summed it up. It is a mess. And the more it looks like Kike Sanchez Flores is going to get this job, the more of a mess it has become.
Yeah, I think it's just gone down a road that's far enough that it's hard to come back and say there was nothing to see here. You know, I think that's the difficulty, that there has been links with jobs before, but this one has just gone that bit further because it's, you know, as Richard laid it out very clearly, you know, all the people involved with the scene are now wondering, well, is this a plan B for you? Is this a fallback for you?
And it's not an easy mess to navigate the way out of, because the FAI are going to have to come out now and explain what happened. Martin O'Neill is going to have to explain what has happened, and their stories need to be the same.
And they will say there was nothing to say. They're not going to come out and say, well, this actually is a bit of a mess now that you mention it. They're going to come out and strongly say that there was nothing to see here. That's the only thing that they can do. But I think people who've followed this equation have a fair idea that this hasn't looked good for anyone involved, really.
Answer this, Dan. March, Turkey away. Who's going to be the Republic of Ireland manager?
I still think O'Neill, but it could...
5 seconds. Answer the bloody question.
I say O'Neill, Maybe.
All right.
I don't know.
Thanks, Dan. You've done Trojan work this evening. That is it. Thanks, everyone else involved as well. We're back tomorrow morning, of course, date on OTB AM. And tomorrow on the radio at 7. Tom Dunn is up next. Good night.